You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Love within me for you. Baby, it's true.
In addition to serving as my co-host tonight, Keith Alexander is also offering his talents as DJ for the Political Cesspool radio program this Saturday evening, February 8th. But let's move from music to talk, because let me tell you, folks, we've got one of our all-time favorite guests, not just our all-time favorite guest, or one of them, but certainly a listener favorite as well, the incomparable Dr. Kevin McDonald joins us this evening live. He is, of course, a professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, and has written many scholarly books, including The Culture of Critique and Cultural Insurrections. We can't have him on often enough. Kevin, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, it's great to be here, James.
Well, listen, of course, I exchanged a couple of emails with you earlier this week in setting up this appearance, and of course, we're delighted to have you. The first thing I wanted to have you on for, rather the first reason, was that you had written a short blog post for your website, The Occidental Observer. Folks, check it out at theoccidentalobserver.com. Is it, Kevin?
It's .net.
.net, excuse me. It's on my favorite places, I should know, but because it's on my favorite places, I don't have to log it in manually, the OccidentalObserver.net.
Yeah.
But you wrote an article entitled The Black Code. Why don't you tell us what that was all about?
Yeah, I was just doing some research on some other things, and I ran into this article by these guys who did a study of black students, mainly female, who were asked to the reactions to the various scenarios. And basically the point was that they had much more empathy with blacks who were with other blacks than blacks who were with other whites as friends. Now, you know, if you look at commercials on TV, I'm sure if you watched the Super Bowl, there were a lot of commercials like that, where you had white guys with black guys. And that's like sort of American image of our multicultural harmonious future. But in fact, black people who have these white friends, and there are some, are actually looked down by other blacks. They're sort of rejected. They're not seen as black, and they these subjects have less empathy for them. They feel less sorry for them if something bad happens to them or something like that. So it's really an indication of how strongly blacks identify as black, and how much they sort of dislike white people, in a sense. That is, hanging out with white people is really, you know, a bad thing. It's something that that makes you less empathic for that person. That, you know, if you're black, if these black subjects, that was their reaction. Right? They really don't like that when they see other blacks doing it.
Well, Sam, this is part, I mean, not Sam, excuse me, Kevin. This is part of the folklore and folk knowledge of Southern whites that, you know, is, you know, what we basically learned at our mother's breast. Blacks have an incredibly strong sense of racial solidarity with one another, and they severely punish those among their number, other blacks, that don't. If there is a black politician that they perceive to be a sellout, in other words, somebody that is either race neutral or actually favors the interests of white people, that guy is toast. I can tell you in a place like Memphis that has a black majority that he would be toast. And this sense of racial solidarity exists in every group. People are not only allowed but encouraged to have a sense of racial solidarity unless they're white Gentiles. White Gentiles can't have a sense of racial solidarity without being called a racist. Now, when I was a child, being a racist meant you had a sense of active animosity against people that were not members of your race. But because of the Herculean efforts of people like Tim Wise and Jane Elliott and other people, we've come to this crazy notion of white privilege that says that it's not only impermissible for white people to have a sense of animosity towards other races, it is equally invalid, bad, whatever you want to call it, for white people to have any rudimentary sense of racial solidarity, to lobby the government in their perceived interests, for example. And, you know, it makes no sense whatsoever, but I'm glad to see that somebody's actually studied this phenomenon and quantified it. But believe me, I grew up knowing it. I'm sure James grew up knowing it, and most people, most white people in the South, grew up knowing that.
Yeah, I didn't grow up in the South, but so I didn't know that. But I, you know, my own personal experiences, when you meet someone, you know, black people, when you read about, say, black musicians, they always have other blacks as their idol, the person that they would emulate, or black athletes, when they look up to some other black athlete, it's always a black person. Very rarely would they look up to a white athlete, like Larry Bird or something like that. So, you know, it's pervasive, no question about it.
Well, folks, Kevin's article at theoccidentalobserver.net, The Black Code, was so prescient and insightful that we posted it, or reposted it, rather. We hijacked it at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and we ran it last week. Be sure to check it out. And, Kevin, is there anything more to that extent on this topic? I know we basically have you for two segments tonight, and the two topics we'll be covering in each segment are not particularly related, but is there anything else about the Black Code and that article that you would like to share with the audience?
Well, I think it extends to other things. The last part of the article, I quote this, a black student in an article by Heather McDonald, no relation, who talks about how, you know, she's a Columbia University student and she's being forced to take a class where they have to listen to Mozart and Haydn, something like that. And she's just horrified, you know, that this is, we have to listen to this racist stuff in our curriculum. So in the entire, all these departments at the university, the great writers and musicians are being purged. You know, the English majors don't have to take Shakespeare anymore. They take, you know, courses in postmodern, you know, stuff or by black writers or something like that, but the great writers of Western civilization are increasingly ignored
because
all these new faculty hires are going to be specialists in like black literature or gay literature or something like that. They're not going to be experts in Milton or Dickens or any of those people.
I know you, being a university professor yourself, could talk to us about this for hours. But certainly, I'm sure, because they were white and that they were European, that they therefore must be racist and aren't worthy of study. We got to take a break. When we come back, Kevin's going to give us a scientific perspective on an exhibit that is traveling to museums around the country. And we've talked about this the last couple of weeks on the show. We're going to get it from a professor's point of view when we return. Stay tuned.
Now you can get the same survival food U.S. Special Forces use on their toughest field missions. High-protein, high-energy, freeze-dried foods known as long-range patrol rations, or LRPs. Soldiers love LRP rations. They're lightweight and easy to carry. Easy to prepare by just adding water. Easy to enjoy because they taste great. Civilians love LRPs as a solution for emergency preparedness and recreational activities with limited storage space, such as hiking, climbing, sailing, or RV travel. Veteran-owned Freeze-Dry Guy is your exclusive source for this 2013 U.S. military overrun. Long on nutrition, these delicious entrees have a long shelf life lasting decades. But this rare opportunity, this limited supply, will not last long. You have to act now. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD. Or log on now to freezedryguy.com, freezedryguy.com.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
DJ Keith Alexander tonight, folks. It's great stuff. I tell you, Keith is spinning them the right way tonight. And that on top of Kevin McDonald being our featured guest for the first couple of segments this hour. Incredible radio. And I tell you, Kevin's crew there at theoccidentalobserver.net are second to none. We were catapulted into the top 10 most listened to shows online tonight in the country. Thanks in no small part to the promotion of tonight's interview with Kevin on his own website. I think they were disappointed in the first hour that he wasn't appearing to the second because we faded down until about the 15th spot. But nevertheless, we're back in the top 10, and Kevin is in no small part responsible for that. Kevin, before we get to the next topic, Keith wants to offer a quick summation of the last segment's points of discussion.
There's another part to what you're talking about, too, with the diminution of the great white writers of the English language. Even when I was going to college in the late 60s and early 70s, you saw obvious, invalid, strained effort to promote black writers like Richard Wright and Ralph Ellison into the first rank as if they were the peers of Shakespeare and Milton and Dickens, for example. They obviously weren't. But we were led to believe that they were, and if you dared to tell the emperor he had no clothes and said these guys just don't compare with Shakespeare, Milton, or Dickens, well, you would be hooted down. Political correctness was there, Kevin, probably when you and I were students, too, were they not?
Oh, absolutely. It began back in the 60s, there's no question about it. But when I started out the university, I don't think it was that way. I really had to feel the English departments were about the great classics. You read about 18th century poetry and all that. But you know, this just to start to get away from that. You have women's literature and black literature and gay literature and all the aggrieved groups, all the victims. That was what it became, and then that's what it's. It's worse than that now. It's worse now, because if you were if you were actually majoring in English back in the '60s, you probably would have been exposed to that. But you would have had to take courses in Shakespeare and so on. Nowadays, you can avoid all that Shakespeare stuff, and pretty soon departments won't even hire people who have Shakespeare, because students won't have much interest in those courses.
It's so egregious, Kevin. I mean, you have to be a member of the support group of the regime, as our mutual friend Sam Dixon calls them, or you have no job to be a reader of those of excellence, the writers of excellence. Well, the Dead Poet Society, as Robin Williams even called them, the Dead White Males, yes. You know, you're passé. Well, Kevin, let me ask you this, and this is actually your field. I sent to you an email earlier this week about a traveling museum exhibit entitled Race. It's put on by the American Anthropological Society, or the American Anthropological Association, I should say. And basically the entire gist of this exhibit, and it's here in Memphis now, so I've been to it, is that race is a social construct. Race is a biological fiction. You're a man of science. Is that true?
It's completely false. And, you know, American Anthropological Association has been on the far left ever since Franz Boas, who's one of the big topics in the culture of critique. It's been going on for a century, but these people they're on the left, and that means they're very, very pro-multicultural, and they just keep saying this. I mean, you can find scientists yet who think that race is a good, valid scientific concept. For example, you can tell a person's race by their skeletal remains. You can tell it by their DNA. There are physical markers. It's outrageous to say it's purely a social construct. And then of course, it becomes part of this saying that race was invented to oppress non-white people, and have this whole thing of privilege. I was just looking at one. Somebody sent me one from Ceylon, and it's called The History of White People, and it's all about white privilege, and it's just outrageous. A mantra now, and if you look at that article on Salon, it's called "The History That White People Have to Learn." It's just assumed. She doesn't have to argue. She can simply state this as a fact that everyone agrees with. But it's not. I was very pleased to learn that Richard Dawkins, who's a prominent evolutionary person, he's written many books and all that, and he's not actually good on things like multiculturalism and so on, but I noticed he does say that there is such a thing as race, and he has a very nice article in Discover magazine, I guess it is, and again, he shows the population genetics. I mean, you just do simple population genetics with, blood samples or saliva samples or whatever, you see huge separation between the races genetically. There's just no question about this. And, you can also get into Philippe Rushton and brain size and IQ and the correlations with race there. You know, so that's what they don't want. They don't want to have the idea that race exists and is correlated with important traits like intelligence. That's what they want to keep off the table. But it's not science, but it's politics, and it's power at this point.
Well, of course, know that the seminal book presenting the left's viewpoint on this was by Ashley Montague, Race, Mankind's Most Dangerous Myth, that came out in the 40s. Ashley Montague, you would think, is probably a member of the House of Lords. Instead, it is the nom de plume of a particular Jewish writer named Israel Ehrenrig. That seems to be the source of all of these crazy left-wing notions that have found their way into the fabric of academia and have basically crowded the truth out.
Montague was more extreme than his mentor. He was a student of Franz Boas, the anthropologist for who basically created the left in anthropology. So, Ashley Montague, very important propagandist, also appears in the culture of critique.
Well, it's good to know, though, Kevin, and I know that there have been some supporting articles to this extent at the Occidental Observer in recent weeks about the myth that race is not rooted in science and DNA and genetics, and to have a man of science, a man of your esteem on the air to disprove what museums, I mean, major American museums are presenting as fact is a breath of fresh air. And I've committed a cardinal sin tonight in inviting you for only two segments. We were overbooked, but I wanted to have you on. Anytime a man of Kevin McDonald's intellect is on the air with us, he should have a full hour. I know Keith wants to make a final parting remark, Kevin, before we lose you this evening. And then we already are looking forward to the next appearance that you'll have with us.
Well, we have a local museum here in Memphis, the appropriately named Pink Palace. That wasn't, you know, and as a result, that's where this traveling roadshow on race, which questions the validity of the very concept of race, comes from. We'd like your comments on that next week, if you can grace us with another appearance.
Sure. I have, as James has suggested, I have made a conscious effort to have more on race, because I see this so often. It's a mantra. The media, they just keep saying it and saying it as if this is gospel truth, that all academics agree with it, that there's no scientific basis. This is outrageous, and it has to be combated. We have to keep talking about it.
Well, we will combat it together, my friend. Thank you so much, Dr. Okay. McDonald, for spending some time with us tonight. We love you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. It's live radio tonight. I mean, we never fool you when saying we're live, but we actually tape it. We never tape anything. Now, from time to time, if it's someone like Gary Sinise, yes, we've taped an interview with Gary Sinise. We've taped an interview with Victoria's Secret model Kylie Basuti. From time to time, on very rare occasion, we will tape an interview. But tonight is not the case. We were expecting to have Craig Boddicker, a filmmaker, acclaimed filmmaker, a good friend of ours, director of the gripping film A Conversation About Race, but we have not been able to get a hold of him at his scheduled appearance, and we hope that everything's okay. We trust that everything's okay. Winston Smith is on the line with us now. Winston was intending to command that interview. So we will do it with Winston sans Craig. Winston, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. I'm glad to be here again. I'm sorry that Craig couldn't make it. He lives sort of out in the boondocks in a very remote place, and sometimes his communications are spotty at best. And I'm sure that it was just a technical glitch that's keeping him from getting to us. I don't know what the weather's like out where he lives. I'm not going to say where he lives, but he told me earlier that it's he's having some problems with communications, but I think you and I will do just fine.
Well, and Keith is still here. Keith has volunteered to grace us with his presence for some extended play this evening. And, of course, folks, we want to plug Craig's work. Craig has been on this show more times than I can remember. A conversationaboutrace.com is the website. He produced this award-winning documentary film of the same name, A Conversation About Race, a few years ago. And he's been on the show many times to talk about that and other matters pertaining to the topic. And whatever is keeping Craig from calling in tonight, we know it's something that is unavoidable. So we will reschedule him at our earliest possible convenience. And Keith is receiving a call from his mother here in the studio. Keith is receiving a call from his mother. Eddie the Bombardier Miller, too, was supposed to be. Keith was supposed to, or rather Eddie was supposed to be here tonight, but he's training for another marathon. I mean, God knows. And so he was out of commission. So you never, you know, 9 times out of 10, a show goes off without a hitch. That 1 time out of 10, it just goes to prove that we are live.
Or as I say, everything that can go wrong does go wrong. Murphy's Law is alive and well here at the Political Cesspool, but you know what? We're going to soldier on anyway. We can roll with the punches. Give us your best shot, cruel fate, and we will we'll not only endure but prevail.
Well, one thing we were going to talk about, Winston, tonight with Eddie really wanted to share the story about how he wore a yarmulke to church last week.
And did you do that?
I wasn't joking when I texted you about that. He actually wore it to the studio last week too, but I was so I was so bumfuzzled by the duck call he brought in to work when he walked in and he started doing a Cornish hen mating call, or a hen in heat, how she sounds, and he started doing that on the air. That I the yarmulke was like it didn't even faze me because he was doing all of that, right, Keith?
Yeah, he was going to produce the Jewish version of Duck Dynasty, apparently. He was going to debut it here on the Political Cesspool. The reason he was wearing the yarmulke, Winston, was because his particular church, Macon Road Baptist in Memphis, is so sold out to Jewish dispensationalism that he thought that there was no way that could more assuredly raise his stock in the church than to wear a yarmulke to church, which he did. And we're going to have to leave it till next week for Eddie to tell you the reaction that he got.
I thought, you know, when James, when you told me that actually happened, my first response was, what, is he trying to get thrown out of church now? He's been thrown out of several political events. Now church?
Yeah, he is trying.
Well, maybe he is trying, but I don't know. But he told me this story in that he wore the yarmulke to church. He did get thrown out of his Esther Bible study class, but the thing is, he was just so convinced that, you know, a large majority of his church is so committed to blessing Israel rather than worship of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You know, what comes first is blessing Israel, that perhaps if he wore a yarmulke, it would raise his stock there in the social standing of his fellow congregants. And so he wore it, and he shook the hand of his pastor, Brother Webb, and he bowed his head as he shook it to be sure that his pastor saw the Jewish skull cap there on Eddie's head. And the pastor shook his hand and didn't say anything. And so he doubled back and shook his hand again. He said, "Brother Wayne, didn't you see my hat?" And Eddie's pastor said, "Yes, Eddie, I saw it." Or, "Yes, Brother Eddie, I saw it, but I don't know what you're doing, but we're just going to let you do it."
maybe he should insist on being called Eddie Millerberg.
Then he truly would be worshipped there.
Yeah, Eddie's been known to push the envelope, and he's bound and determined that he's going to convert his entire church of Jewish dispensationalists, minority-worshipping Southern Baptists, which unfortunately is what they've become now, back to the faith of their fathers. Lots of luck, Eddie.
Well, nevertheless, I mean, it is a good church, I mean, but it has its flaws, and Eddie, you know, we talk about those flaws from time to time, but I mean, it's a typical Southern Baptist church. They'll hold the line on homosexual marriage, but not much else, when it comes to political correctness. But I mean, they do still preach that all men must bow a knee to Christ in order to be saved. So we'll give them that. That is a fundamental biblical truth, and at least they're holding the line there. God bless them.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. You know, John Hagee doesn't think that Jews have to bow their knee to Christ in order to be saved. In fact, they have this dual covenant nonsense going on now where all non-Jews have to bend their knee and have to acknowledge Christ as their one and only Savior and route to salvation. But Jews, they get a dispensation or a pass on that. So, you know, what is happening? Who knows? Where did this heresy come from? It came from John Darby, who was a 19th century Scottish theologian whose views unfortunately made it into the Scofield Bible, which tends to be the foundational Bible for most of these new fundamentalist rewrites of the Bible. You know, sola scriptura is a fundamental principle of Protestantism, along with every man a priest. In other words, sola scriptura, only the scriptures, not the creeds of man, not the commentaries, things like that. That's a fine principle, but when that's your principle, you've got to refrain from the temptation of rewriting the Bible every 10 years, Winston. I like to point out to them, what is the last verse or last message of the Bible? It's in the book of Revelations, and it pronounces a curse upon anyone who would so much as add a word or take a word away. And, of course, that's what all these various and sundry rewrites of the Bible are intended to do, to change things.
You're absolutely right, Eddie. Eddie, I'm ready for Eddie. You're absolutely right, Keith. The Scofield Bible has been the bane of Christianity here in the West for, well, the 100 and some odd years that it's been around. I think every heresy that you see in the church these days, you can trace back to the Scofield Bible.
Keith gave you a hearty amen to that, Winston. And as we're treading water here, folks couldn't recognize the fact that we are here left in the wind without our second of two featured guests tonight, Craig Boddicker. And listen, folks, you know, it happens to the best of us. It happens to anyone. And I'm sure there's a good reason for Craig's absence tonight. He's a good friend of ours. He's been on many, many times before and was booked and confirmed. So whatever it is, we hope it's not too serious. But when it's live radio and it just doesn't show, you just feel it. You know, the show must go on. So, Winston, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about you, James.
Listen, I am so in love with myself, you know, these days. It's sickening. I mean, narcissistic. What was his name? Narcissus? Was that his name?
Narcissus,
excuse me. Yes, Keith. The authority on all things Greek and Roman. But no, just kidding, Winston. What about me would you like to focus on?
Well, I want to tell you, by the time you came into the WLRM studio singing something like, I love me, I love me, I wish I had a twin, because then I could love me all over again.
I didn't know about that, but he does have a mirror over his bed, but he it's a single bed, so he wants to look at himself. He said, you know, it's like Rodney Dangerfield said, his sex life was so bad that they put a mirror over the dog's bed.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. Hey, we're having fun. Listen, it's all in good fun. Hey, we're going to collect ourselves during this break, folks. Please bear with us. Hey, listen, I got a few things. We're going to get back onto the beaten path after this. Stay tuned.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0-degree sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold 2 adults and 1 child, or 4 young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Large cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Get on the show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We're treading water here without Craig Boddicker. What do we want to talk about? I actually got a couple of things to talk about. I'm going to pull it in. I'd save these for next week. We're going to get to next week early. Yes, Keith, let's cover that as well. But first of all, folks, and I mentioned this, referenced it in passing, I should say, earlier in the show, I'm going to allow each Keith and Winston to take a crack at this because, as God is my witness, I could not figure it out. So I'm going to offer it up to my elder brothers in arms, my intellectual superiors, but not my physical superiors in terms of good looks or my enhancing. No. No, seriously, guys, here it is. I was driving in Jackson, Mississippi a couple of weeks ago. I shared this story in the first hour. My wife's best friend had her third child, so we were down there for the delivery. My wife is in the delivery room. Her husband is a good friend of mine. And so we were down there to support them and to help them the first couple of days. It was during the week, so of course I didn't have to miss a show. But I saw a billboard in Jackson, Mississippi. It had a big picture of Martin Luther King on it. And underneath his mugshot read, AIDS is a civil right. Now, I posted that very billboard to our website and asked the audience to share with me what they thought it meant, because I sure as heck couldn't figure it out. So, Winston, first to you, then to Keith. AIDS is a civil right. What's the message there that I'm too racist or ignorant to get?
It had a picture of Martin Luther King next to it?
It was just his face with that. It was subtitled AIDS. Perhaps another revelation of King that we never knew, but AIDS is a civil right. Keith, let's let Keith have the first crack at it, because he's actually seen the billboard. We'll give Winston a couple of moments to reflect, but Keith, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, we've always said that the civil rights movement provided the template for left-wing change, and it was there. The left's most successful radical egalitarian movement. Blacks are the same as, just as good as whites. And whenever the left gets in trouble with one of its ever more absurd radical egalitarian movements like environmentalism, plants and animals are the same as, just as good as human beings, or gay rights, homosexuals are the same as, just as good as heterosexuals, whenever they run into heavy sledding trying to sell that kettle of fish to the public, they always retreat hastily to the civil rights movement so they can say, see, the people that are opposing gay rights or the people that are imposing environmentalism are the same racist, bigoted, Neanderthal, white conservatives that oppose the civil rights movement. So this is obviously an attempt by the advocates of gay rights to build that bridge again between the civil rights movement and the gay rights movement. Of course, there are many black civil rights leaders that are totally offended and put off by the efforts to make that bridge, but that doesn't stop them. In fact, the Jewish paymasters of the NAACP reined in the NAACP within the past year and said, if you want to continue to be funded by us, you're going to get behind gay rights. And there was this abrupt 180-degree change in the NAACP's leadership's position regarding homosexual rights as a result of that attempt to yank their chain and to cut off their water, financially speaking. So that's what I think it is. I think it's an attempt to equate gay rights with the black civil rights movement. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Dwight Yoakam said, or somebody?
I don't know, Keith, but Winston, any thoughts?
Well, Keith, that was great. I think, actually, it's a typo. I Googled it, and the story dated January 17th, 2014, says AIDS is a civil rights issue. It also talks about billboards and saying that AIDS is a civil rights issue. So I think somebody just made a typo, whether it was intentional or not. Who knows? But it sure is funny.
Well, if it was a typo made, it was by the billboard's facilitators, because I just grabbed a Google image search, AIDS is a civil rights billboard, and put it on the Cesspool site, baby.
That's why they ended that gifted program in New York, because of typos like that, I'm sure, by the minority advocates of radical egalitarianism.
Now, we're going to do a compare and contrast here, folks, between John Rocker and Joe Biden. Okay, pay attention. Here we go.
Oh, my.
Joe Biden, last week in Philadelphia, while giving a speech, said LaGuardia Airport in New York City looks like a third world country. That's what Joe Biden said, the vice president of the United States. Joe Biden says LaGuardia Airport looks like a third world country. Now, do we remember what happened to John Rocker when he said the exact same thing about New York City 15 years ago? Here's what Joe Biden said, the direct quote, during his speech on infrastructure in Philadelphia. He said, quote, if you blindfolded someone and took them at 2 o'clock in the morning into the airport at Hong Kong and said, where do you think you are? They'd say, this must be America. This is a modern airport. But if you took that same person blindfolded to LaGuardia Airport in New York, they would say, I must be in some third world country. Well, to Joe Biden's credit, a broken clock is right twice a day, but he is not suffering nearly the shame and scorn that John Rocker said for admitting the same truth 15 years ago. Keith, to you first and then to Winston.
Yeah, basically John Rocker made the comment that he thought he was in a third world locale when he went to Times Square in the heart of Manhattan. Then on the other hand, Joe Biden said that he thought he was in a third world locale when he went to LaGuardia Airport. Now, why is one more objectionable than the other, or why is one less objectionable than the other? I'm baffled, James.
Winston, are you baffled, Winston?
I used to be baffled by Joe Biden ever since he ran for president quite a long time ago. Keith may remember this, but he had to abandon his presidential campaign because he plagiarized a speech from a British member of parliament. I think his name was Neil Kinnock, but he took a good portion of a speech given by Mr. Kinnock and claimed it as his own, so he had to abandon his presidential campaign. I'm surprised I remember it when so many other people forgot about it. But
well, why in the world would he be punished for that when Martin Luther King's plagiarism of his doctoral thesis at Boston University was admitted by Boston University, but of course they refused to take any punitive action. Furthermore, his letter to a Birmingham jail, one of his supposedly famous literary efforts, was proven to be plagiarized. In other words, taken from some other author's work and not attributed. Likewise, his I Have a Dream speech was plagiarized from another source. So I think the left has a great tradition of plagiarizing, but only conservatives get in trouble for plagiarizing. So yeah, why would Joe Biden get in trouble for plagiarizing? It baffles me.
Folks, make no mistake about it. Plagiarism is theft. At my college, if you were even reasonably suspected of having plagiarized something, you were automatically expelled permanently. You were not admitted back, and I'm proud to say that my college maintains that that part of the honor code to this day. But Joe Biden, he has a history of saying the most bizarre things, of saying things that make no sense. He is an acknowledged big mouth by everybody on Capitol Hill. But, you know, James, there is another example of where he can say things that would get us in a lot of trouble. It was back in, when was that? May of last year. He was talking to a Jewish civil rights group, and he was attributing various things to Jews in America. And here's what he said. He said, you can't talk about the civil rights movement in this country without talking about Jewish freedom riders and Jack Greenberg. He said, telling a story about seeing a group of Jewish activists at a segregated movie theater in Delaware. He went on to say, you can't talk about the women's movement without talking about Betty Friedan or American advances in science technology without mentioning Einstein and Carl Sagan. He goes on and he says, I believe what affects the movements in America, what affects our attitudes in America are as much the culture and arts as anything else. That's why he spoke out on gay marriage. He said that gays were behind the movement for gay marriage. He was behind the movements for gay rights. So Joe Biden was saying things, he was attributing things to to the Jewish influence in America that if we were to say it, it'd be front page on the ADL's website, and of course the SPLC would be all over it. Why the double standard exists? Well, we know the double standard exists because of sheer out and out hatred. Folks like those hate us, and they will hold us to a different standard they hold themselves. And we have a word for doing that, and it's hypocrisy.
Well, hypocrisy has never stopped the left, that's for sure. We talked about that in the first hour with the coverage of the Winter Olympic Games and freedom of speech as it relates to Putin's Russia and the rest of the West. If you missed that, folks, check it in the first hour. We're going to take a break. Keith's leaving. Winston and I with you for the remainder of the third hour. It's going to be good.